I've been thinking of starting a new exercise program and feel like I found one that might be a fit. The warm-up includes getting the ball rolling, jumping to conclusions, and dragging my heels. From there, you spend 60 seconds each beating around the bush, making mountains out of molehills, and adding fuel to the fire. Followed by 10 repetitions of bending over backwards, throwing your weight around, and passing the buck. And then you're really burning the calories when you jump on the bandwagon, climb the walls, push your luck, and pull out all the stops. And then you start to bring your heart rate back down again by putting your foot in your mouth and by picking up the pieces. Doesn't that sound like a great workout? Some of you maybe are already signed up for that one. It's funny the lengths that we will go to sometimes to avoid doing something that we know we should do, or we're coming up with other ways to try to still accomplish something similar. Another thing we work hard to avoid in addition to exercise is conflict and confrontation. Sometimes we will put up with horrible conditions and behaviors rather than have to confront somebody. Or maybe we get used to trying to deal with conflict in other ways that seem simpler, that take less time. So we get used to just running over other people when we want to get our way. Or maybe we've learned to manipulate people to get our way rather than putting in the time and the effort to learn new ways of dealing with conflict and confrontation constructively. You know, the Apostle Paul, in his letter to Christians in Rome, had some interesting instructions. Chapter 12, he said, "Live at peace with everyone." Now, that sounds pretty straightforward, doesn't it? And doesn't it also sound completely unrealistic and impossible to live at peace with everyone? Now, of course, you Bible scholars know that I clipped off the front part of the verse that is super important there. What Paul actually says is, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Because the reality is, sometimes it seems like it's just not possible. And the reality is that it doesn't just depend on you. I mean, in any conflict situation, in any confrontational kind of situation, there are two people, and both of them have to be equally committed to working together to come to resolution on that. Well, we are in week 3 of a series that we're calling Tough Love. Last week, Melita kind of skipped over a few steps and jumped us to like the 300 or 400 level, course level of tough love, when she talked about the subject of forgiveness. And this morning, what I want to discuss is maybe something that is part of being able to forgive others some of the time. Certainly, it's part of working through the toughness of loving each other, and that is confrontation and conflict. It's part of the step on the road to loving each other well and to forgiving. Let me just acknowledge that in this series that we're doing, as we talk about tough love, you know, it's not all that hard to stand up on a platform and tell you all the right things to do. And then, you know, as we listen to these words, we're all left with the reality that to actually go and do them, I mean, it's called tough love for a reason. These things are hard, and you can think about all kinds of, but what about? What about this situation, or what about that situation? And I would just say that that's one of the benefits of being part of a group. Many of our growth groups and fellowship groups are discussing the sermons as we go through the series, and that's a great place to go beyond what can be said from the platform to think about those what about kinds of questions. So as we think about this subject of confrontation and conflict, there's one statement of Jesus that really lays it out probably as simply and clearly as any other. It's out of Matthew chapter 18. And Matthew 18 is really a whole chapter on relationships among followers of Jesus, life in the context of sometimes conflict and confrontation kinds of situations. But here's the verse that I want to focus in on, Matthew 18, verse 15. Jesus speaking says, if your brother or sister sins against you, go and point out their fault just between the two of you. If they listen to you, you have won them over. Now he goes on from there and processes some next steps beyond that. But I just want to really, for this time, I can't say everything. So I just want to hone in on this verse. And I want us to think about, what does it look like to really do this? And I'm indebted to Pastor John Ortberg in a book that he wrote called Everyone's Normal Till You Get to Know Them. Great title. He breaks this down. And so let me give you his breakdown, and then I'm going to break down his breakdown. A lot of breakdowns here. How about that? He says, he breaks it down this way. If there is a conflict, you go to the person in private and discuss the problem for the purpose of reconciliation. So, I just ticked through that quickly. Let's walk through it a little bit. It sounds clear and simple, doesn't it? Until you actually try to do it. And then it feels a whole lot harder. And the reality is that at each point in this little process that I've just laid out for you, at each point we face decisions about how we're going to respond, what we're going to do. And it is easy in each of these situations to come up with an alternative that maybe feels more natural, that certainly feels more comfortable than what the instruction says. So let's walk through this. If there is a conflict is where we begin. And so that is simply the reality of acknowledging conflict. Now Jesus poses a situation here. He says, if someone sins against you. And we could hone in on what does it mean to sin against a person. I don't want to focus in too specifically on that word sin. I mean, sin in the Bible, as the biblical writers use it, can be used in different ways. Sometimes sin is something that happens between two people where one person offends another. Often sin is about rebelling against God. Sin is missing the mark. It is crossing a line. Some translations use the word trespass. If someone trespasses against you, if they wander from the path into your territory, they make a mistake. Or the Message paraphrase simply says, if someone hurts you. And the reality is that the statement started with if, but it's not really if, is it? It's when. When this happens. I mean, that is the nature of relationships. People get into conflicts. People fight. And they might get into conflict a lot or a little. It might be constructive or destructive. It might be fair or unfair. They might do it with attacking and blaming or with ducking and denying. But conflict does and will happen. And it's important to say that it's not always a bad thing when it does. I mean, God can work his will through even conflict and sometimes especially through conflict. So acknowledge that it happens. And then if there's a conflict, you, that's the next word. And that's simply a way of saying, take responsibility. Take responsibility when conflict comes. But I don't want to. Do you? I mean, you know, they hurt me, right? So they should come to me. I mean, it's not fair that I should have to take the first step toward them. I mean, I'm the victim here. Jesus says, if you've been hurt, you go. You go and talk to them. But just in case we'd be tempted to think that Jesus lets you off the hook if it's not your problem. We could jump to another verse, Matthew chapter 5, verses 23 and 24. Jesus says, if you're offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them and then come and offer your gift. Now, in 21st century American culture, it's hard for us to fully grasp just what Jesus is fully saying there. I mean, he's essentially saying, you've traveled from wherever you live to Jerusalem, to the temple altar, and you've brought a gift. Maybe it's a monetary gift for the temple, or maybe you're bringing your live animal sacrifice. And Jesus says, if you there remember that you've offended someone, that you've hurt them somehow, then leave your money, leave your animal, whatever, go back wherever you came from, and make it right, and then come back and finish the offering, is essentially what Jesus is saying there. It's always your move, in other words. In any conflict, that means that followers of Jesus, whether you have hurt someone else or they have hurt you, followers of Jesus in every situation should be chomping at the bit to address it. Are you chomping at the bit to confront somebody else and deal with that conflict today? I don't sense a lot of excitement in the room about this. Jesus says, point out their fault. Now, implied in what he's saying, again, if this person has sinned against you, then you're presuming that fault lies with them. But implied always is start with whatever percentage of the fault lands on your doorstep. And that's a good exercise for us to always evaluate. I mean, it might be 99.9% the other person's fault and 0.1% your fault. But the reality is that you are 100% responsible for the 0.1% that is your fault. And so, take responsibility. Take responsibility for whatever blame belongs to you, and take responsibility to see it resolved. If there's a conflict, you go. Which is to say, you approach, don't avoid the person with whom you're in conflict. Now, this may be the most significant part of the process, and also the place where we are most likely to abandon ship. Is the actual going. Because I'll speak for myself, I don't want to go. I mean, I would rather sulk and simmer for a little while. Isn't that more fun? I'd rather have the conversation in my head, 10 times, and in every one, I've got all the right comebacks. And after all, what if I go and what if I stumble over my words? Or what if I say the wrong thing? Or what if I can't think of anything to say? Or what if I get emotional in the moment? I mean, all kinds of things could happen. It could go wrong all kinds of ways. And after all, doesn't time heal all wounds? You heard that one? It's interesting that we don't apply that one in, the realm of medicine. Because if so, then that time you spend in the waiting room will be time well spent. And think of all that healing time you could spend just sitting there. Except we know that sometimes you need doctors and surgeries and medicines to heal. Time doesn't heal all wounds. And actually, sometimes it makes things worse. An open wound can become a huge problem. And so anger can turn into resentment, can turn into bitterness that lasts decades. And so, when it comes time to deal with a conflict, take responsibility and approach, don't avoid. And you may need to pray, God, give me your love, give me the courage to go and work on this. And certainly, be thoughtful about how and when and where you do that, be attentive to your attitude as you go. Never good to go when you're angry to deal with it. But go with as much wisdom and skill as you can. I mean, doing it flawlessly is not the point, because if you wait until you're ready to do it perfectly, you will never go. If there's a conflict, you go. Approach, don't avoid. And approach alone with the other person to start. No third parties. Of course, again, that's the last thing we want to do. I mean, if that person has hurt us, we don't want to go to them. I mean, there's probably 100 other people we'd rather go to first, right? I mean, it's much more fun to commiserate with someone else or to, you know, to share a prayer request, right? You know, I need you to pray for my beloved brother or sister in Christ who is deeply disturbed and completely irrational, right? Of course, that's counter to the advice of Jesus. And to the practice of the early church. I mean, they had their conflicts as well. In fact, let me just point one out to you. I love this. This is out of the book of Philippians. So this is the Apostle Paul's letter to Christians in the city of Philippi, which if you have read the letter, I mean, it's generally a pretty upbeat, positive, joy-filled kind of letter. But at the beginning of chapter 4, there's this little nugget that we often just skip right over. I mean, it comes right between Paul's instructions to stand firm and rejoice in the Lord always, which is where we typically focus. But right in between there, chapter 4, verse 2, he says, I plead with you, Adia, and I plead with Syntuche to be of the same mind in the Lord. Now, those are two women's names. Euodia and Syntuche. And apparently they're having an issue. Now, maybe the issue was over whose name is harder to pronounce. We don't really know. Paul doesn't say what the issue was. But apparently there was an issue between these, and it was significant enough that Paul actually, in a letter to the church that would have been received presumably by the church leaders and then read publicly to the church gathered, he names them and pleads with them to work it out. It would kind of enliven our services, wouldn't it, to include, you know, a comment about the people that have been in conflict the previous week. Would you come to hear that, or would you not come to hear that? That's an interesting question. What's also fascinating about this is what Paul doesn't advise. I mean, he doesn't advise, Euodia, you know, you need to go talk to some others about how unfair Syntuche has been to you, and you need to discuss her character flaws and her personal baggage at length so you can all pray better for her. He doesn't say, Syntuche, you know, you need to let 3 or 4 of your close friends know how Euodia has mistreated you, and so they can affirm, you know, that you've been such a trooper and you've been a martyr through all her shenanigans. I mean, Paul doesn't say that. Instead, he asks them to resolve it directly. Be of the same mind. And then he goes on and he actually commends them. He says, they've contended at my side in the cause of the gospel. Their names are written in the book of life, Paul says. So alongside, you know, kind of calling them out in the church service through this letter, he also gives them the highest compliment. I mean, these women, they have contended by my side in the cause of the gospel, and their names are written in the book of life. And so if they can't resolve it, Paul says, I mean, they've got to deal with it between them, but if they can't, you need to help them because he values them so highly. Apparently the conflict didn't diminish their standing with him. Start with just the two of you. Conflict, Christian conflict expert Ken Sandy says, keep the circle of people involved in the conflict as small as possible for as long as possible. Because, you know, more problems can come when you start to add more people to the mix. You can suddenly give a third person a reason to dislike someone that maybe they don't even know. And there's also this myth that if we talk our anger out, that'll actually lessen it. You know, research suggests that it's actually the opposite. That when you kind of recite your grievances, that actually riles you up again and makes you feel as angry as you did when the thing first happened. And then just makes you feel even more hostile toward the source. Now, that doesn't mean that you should never talk about it with someone else. Or that there's never a time to involve someone else as a sounding board or even as a help. But the motivation should always be, I'm moving toward trying to resolve this. I'm not just trying to make myself feel better in the moment. It's ironic that, you know, with the kind of wisdom that the scriptures have for us in situations like this, that the Church of Jesus has probably fought more and split more bitterly throughout history than many other organizations. You know, by some counts, there are 33,000 or more denominations in our country. And just about all of them came about because of one group splitting from another. Just kind of interesting anecdote. There was a group that called themselves the Church of God, and they had a split off of them that called themselves the True Church of God. And then there was a split off of them that called themselves the Only True Church of God. Now, I don't mean to minimize the significance of issues that churches might separate over. But what I will say is that it is always a tragic thing when splits like that are born out of hostility and anger and choosing to withdraw rather than to engage. Especially between followers of Jesus who prayed that his followers would be one, and seemed to think it was mission critical that happen, that the world will know that I have sent you because of the love and oneness you have for each other. It starts with a willingness to go to the other person alone without pulling in a bunch of other people. You go to discuss the problem with compassion and candor. Oh, missing a point there. Discuss the problem with compassion and candor. Now, that balance is important. Compassion and candor. And some of us, probably most of us, will tend to fall in a ditch on either side. You know, we'll feel such compassion that we'll kind of soft pedal the situation and maybe not say what needs to be said, or we'll be so candid that the other person just feels like they've been punched in the gut. Discuss the problem with compassion and candor. I find that it's great to start by asking questions of the other person and then really listening to their response. I mean, maybe what you'll find is that what you perceived as a big conflict was really just a misunderstanding, and it'll be easier to resolve than you thought. If there's a conflict, you go to the other person and discuss the problem with compassion and candor. I mean, treat them the way that you would want to be treated. Daylene read for us that passage from the Sermon on the Mount, the words of Jesus, that ends with what we call the golden rule. You know, do to others what you would have them do to you. Ken Sandy says that that can lead to what he calls the golden result. He says people will usually treat us as we treat them. So if we blame others for a problem, they usually blame in return. If we say, I was wrong, it's amazing how often the response will be, it was my fault too. Discuss the problem. And let me just add, Ortberg suggests that you need to be willing, when you're discussing the problem, to say the last 10%. Maybe some of you heard that before. Say the last 10%. You know, after going to all the hard work of doing everything leading up to it, some of us might get in that situation, and I some of us is me, maybe you too, but get to that final moment, and then, you know, I have trouble saying the hardest thing that really should be said. I can't bring myself to say it. You know, so then maybe I get vague or fuzzy when I should be crystal clear. And I hem and haw and hope that the other person will fill in the blanks. I want to avoid the pain or the fear. But say the last 10%. Now, that's not to say that you have to straighten everything out in that person or that you're obliged to give them every observation you've ever had. But say the thing that they need to hear, that needs to be said. And then lastly, aim at reconciliation. Jesus says, if he listens, you've won your brother over. Now, to be clear, we're not talking about winning the argument. Yeah, I really showed him. You're trying to win the person. You're trying to strengthen the relationship. The important thing is not to resolve every area of disagreement, but to restore the relationship. A sermon like this is kind of like exercise, isn't it? I mean, when it comes down to it, we kind of know more or less what we should do. I mean, have I said anything that's revolutionized your life this morning? Probably not. But then it comes time to do it. And I thought, as I was planning this sermon and this series, how can we make this really practical? And I had this idea that I ran by some of the other staff. Maybe what we should do is we should have like a night where we invite everybody who's having a conflict with someone else to just show up, and they can have a space in the gym or a room in the church and you know, bring the other person that you're struggling with and just, you know, do all, you know, actually practice this. I was told that maybe wasn't a good idea. I don't know why. I mean, it's practical, right? I will say this. If you find this hitting home with a situation in your life, don't wait to deal with it. I mean, maybe this is a message from God that now is the time to take a step that you've been resisting, avoiding, fretting over, to actually try and do something about it. And if you need a place, Monday to Thursday, 9 to 3, the church is open. There's lots of rooms here. Wednesday evening, the building's open. There are rooms where you could bring the other person and have a conversation and do the kinds of things that I have said this morning. It's been said that we're never more like Jesus than when we are reconciling people. You know, when two people are putting in the work to see past their differences and to seek to connect and understand each other and to resolve what they can, rather than abandoning the relationship. When we do that kind of thing, we're acting an awful lot like Jesus, for whom love was the most important thing. Would you pray with me? Lord, I pray that my words have not oversimplified very complex situations. And I know there are the whatabouts that I haven't been able to speak to. And yet I also suspect that many of us have situations in our lives where these words are very relevant. And so I would simply ask that you would give us the love and the faith and the courage and the stick-to-itiveness and the memory not to walk out of this room and forget what's been said, but the resolve to say, I've waited long enough, and to do it. We want to build our lives on your wisdom, Jesus, and on your love. Help us to do it. Amen.